This is John Gramstrand, and I'm a certified energy specialist for CHS Ag Services in Stephen, Minnesota. We're pleased to bring you this update from the Red River Farm Network. CHS Ag Services, providing solutions for your success.
Good morning, Farm News on the Red River Farm Network. I'm Don Wick with Randy Conan in studio. We'll have updates from Tyler Donaldson and Melissa Hammer as well. There will be no shortage of news this week, beginning with, of course, Election Day tomorrow. The Federal Open Market Committee also will be meeting this week and will be making an interest rate decision on Thursday. And the week caps off Friday with another USDA crop report.
Rain being seen this morning in far northeastern North Dakota, northwestern Minnesota. Another system moves through the region tomorrow into Wednesday. National Weather Service says it will start as a wintry mix before turning into rain tomorrow afternoon and then back to a mix of rain and snow tomorrow night. Checking NDON totals over the past 24 hours, Cavalier 1.26 inches, St. Thomas 1.14, 93 hundredths up at Langdon, Candu at 76 hundredths, Grafton 65 hundredths, Fargo 63 hundredths, just over half an inch at Hillsboro, just under a half an inch at Ada, Crookston reporting 45 hundredths.
South American weather will remain favorable for the next 2 weeks. World Weather Incorporated says there will be enough dry weather to support planting progress, but enough moisture to help the crop get started. Widespread rain has been seen in Brazil over the weekend. Southwestern Mato Grosso do Sul was the only area getting too much rain, with reports of 3.5 to more than 6 inches. Argentina, hot over the weekend. Moisture seen in central and southeastern Buenos Aires, which has been one of the driest areas of the country.
Change in cattle movement aimed at traceability going into effect tomorrow. Red River Farm Network farm broadcaster Melissa Hammer has more.
The mandate for electronic identification in cattle is for interstate movement for breeding stock as well as rodeo and exhibition cattle. Minnesota State Cattlemen's Association Executive Director Caitlin Root says this rule comes with exemptions as well.
For Minnesota intrastate movement, that is within the state of Minnesota, all beef cows over 18 months of age and all bulls over 10 months of age will need RFID for intrastate travel. There are exceptions here, so that would be moving cattle direct to slaughter. That is an exemption. Also moving direct to a livestock auction market for that intrastate movement, that would be an exemption as well. And cattle tagged prior to November 5th do not need RFID. It is good for the life of the cattle.
The rule does not impact all cattle movement.
It would mostly be your breeding stock that are moving. And then as far as that USDA interstate rule, we're looking at about 11% of the U.S. cattle herd that would be impacted by the rule. So NCBA worked very hard to secure $15 million, actually, in appropriations funds for producers to have free tags. Now, the free tags are out there. More free tags are coming. For those producers that submitted that request to Board of Animal Health and they haven't received their tags yet, please be patient. Know that they're coming. Get in contact with the Minnesota Board of Animal Health.
Reporting Agriculture's Business, I'm Melissa Hammer for the Red River Farm Network.
RCAF USA, South Dakota Stock Growers Association, and the Farm and Ranch Freedom Alliance are suing USDA to try to block the mandatory electronic identification rule. The groups claim the current animal disease traceability system works and change is not needed.
Expect the grain trade to remain choppy through tomorrow's presidential election. Global Commodity Analytics and Consulting President Mike Zuzulo expects volatility.
Sustainable aviation fuel is picking up steam, it would seem, but I would also say that it's got probably a limited amount of upside as we get closer to the election, especially after the election, depending on which party wins, because the climate agenda is very much on the traders' minds from what I can pick up.
Zuzulo thinks China and Mexico are also front-loading corn and soybeans.
The idea that Mexico is stockpiling corn and China is stockpiling soybeans, I think is really resonates with me and supports the idea that they're very nervous that their currencies are going to weaken more, already more than they already have. after the election. So I think that's probably the number one thing to watch once we get past Tuesday, if we have a declared winner. What does that dollar currency do to the Brazilian real, Chinese yuan, and the Russian ruble as well?
You're listening to the Red River Farm Network.
Farm news on the Red River Farm Network. Corn is backing up in the system. Many grain elevators full with the harvest rush. Advanced Trading Risk Management Advisor Tommy Grisafi says it's more of a timing issue.
Everyone pushed back freight and trains because they said, we can't have a train showing up in September. We may not have a crop. We may be getting this corn in. There was talk of, remember the talk of, let's just leave the corn in the field because it's so wet, we're going to let it dry through the winter. That's not, this corn is coming off 15% moisture going right to town.
Grisafi said the cash market will respond when those shuttle trains are on the schedule.
So there is a phenomenal crop, but it's not that it was so big that the elevator system's overplugged for months. The timing of the trains, what I think we're going to see here in the next few months is these trains are going to come in November, December. We're going to have trains coming in, and we're going to move this grain. Look for a pop in that cash market when the snow flakes, and you always get cold in January. You will have some nasty weather in January, and the elevator system might be looking for grain then.
Cullum, North Dakota farmer Andy Schott says the dry conditions have already affected his farm going into spring.
Well, it's definitely impacting our plans for next year because we pulled out of doing some of the tillage and fertilizer application that we would normally be doing right now because the ground is just too dry and hard. And so that throws some question marks into what our planting conditions will be next spring.
And Schott isn't worrying about availability for next spring's crop yet.
As far as the dryness going into next spring, I'm not too worried about the availability for the crop because I don't even know what a normal weather pattern looks like anymore. So, you know, by May we could be so wet we can't plant, you know, so I don't know. But I do know that it is impacting our tillage and fertilizer plans for the fall. We really aren't able to do anything because if you try to do too much right now, you just make it a big mess and you make things worse for next year.
With the first case of H5N1 showing up in swine, there could be many questions around the safety of the pork industry. National Pork Producer Council President Lori Stevermer wants to ensure consumers know pork is safe.
That there is no concern about the safety of our pork supply. I think that's important for consumers to know. This was a case where H5N1 was found in a small farm in Oregon. And, you know, because it was in that smaller farm and not in a larger commercial farm here in Iowa or Minnesota, I would say there's less of a concern of the risk. Influenzas are common in swine, and actually there is a fairly robust influenza surveillance program that's been going on for a while. I think that active and continuous surveillance really allows our animal and human health people to respond properly to these situations.
Steve Amur also points out the biosecurity tools that the swine industry already has in place.
I think people should know that we as pork producers really work hard on biosecurity with our veterinarians and our advisors, and whether that's, you know, keeping our pigs in barns or the visitors that we have in or any of those other types of safety factors. And so that's really important as we look at preventing the spread of disease. And, you know, even the USDA has some information on their website in terms of how farms can help mitigate disease through better biosecurity practices. So that's really important to keep in mind.
Kensington, Minnesota turkey grower Erica Swatsky was part of an impact and issues forum hosted by the U.S. Poultry and Egg Association in Arlington, Virginia this past week. Focus was on highly pathogenic avian influenza.
For myself, being a turkey producer, you know, something that we have kind of rallied for almost 10 years is to be able to vaccinate our turkeys for high path avian influenza. And so that was kind of one of the stronger messages there that I brought. And then in addition to that, the surveillance that we do within our industry and kind of how that helps us in terms of responding and moving forward.
Swatsky leads the Minnesota Board of Animal Health and sees a need to increase communications between the different livestock species.
Kind of the take-home message is just that us in agriculture need to continue to work together and be engaged to combat any disease, whether it's H5N1 or African swine fever. That continued engagement is really needed.
The OPEC Plus nations have agreed to delay the planned oil production increase until the end of December, citing geopolitical uncertainty. This is the Red River Farm Network.
Good morning. Welcome to Inside Agriculture on the Red River Farm Network. Now that Andrew Thostenson has retired from his position as pesticide program specialist at NDSU Extension, his replacement is set to take over and keep things smoothly rolling along. Red River Farm Network farm broadcaster Tyler Donaldson has more.
New pesticide program specialist Madeline Smith is excited for the challenges her new role will present, while remaining thankful for the foundation her predecessor left behind.
I'm really excited about taking on this position. You know, historically, Andrew Thostenson, I think, has done a great job in building up the pesticide program here at NDSU and providing a solid basis of training and information for folks based around safety and application, but then also trying to tackle navigating some of these more regulatory issues that come to us.
Smith mirrors Thostenson's concerns over pesticide resistance and the lack of new research going into the issue.
There's not a lot of new products now that are coming onto the market. 20 or so years ago, there was a lot more research going into development and there were new modes of action coming out. And now it's just harder to find those compounds. That affects us in a number of different ways. It's a lot longer lead time to develop a new active ingredient. When it consequently does then come onto the market, that extra research and development cost is then reflected in the product cost, so it's oftentimes a lot more expensive. And there's just not as much development going on in that area as there used to be.
2025 offers plenty to keep an eye out for in the realm of pesticide management.
I think in terms of, you know, as we look forward to 2025, many folks will be aware that there's a lot of activity now from EPA with the Endangered Species Act. We have label changes, the chemicals that are going to come down the road here that are going to be a little bit more complex to navigate than they have been in the past. And so that's something that we're going to try and focus on in our training for as much as we know at this point.
For the Red River Farm Network, I'm Tyler Donaldson.
A former executive director of the American Soybean Association has died. Ken Bader led ASA from 1976 to 1992 and was also instrumental in the creation of the National Soybean Checkoff Program. A celebration of life for Bader, 90, will be held in mid-December. Checking markets, we're down 1.25 for Minneapolis wheat. The DEIS contract at 598.5. Chicago wheat for December, 0.25 down. And hard red winter wheat, December down 3.75. DEIS corn, 3.5 lower, 418.25. The soybeans, January, $10.06, and that is 12.25 cents higher. Checking in on the farm calendar, the North Dakota FFA Foundation has their second annual Blue and Gold Gala. That'll be held this upcoming Saturday at the Holiday Inn in Fargo. You can contact the North Dakota FFA Foundation. Go to their website for more details on that event. And also on the calendar, the National Ag Bankers Conference will be held next week starting Tuesday. They'll be meeting in Milwaukee for their convention. And CHS has its annual meeting in Minneapolis. The dates, December 5th and 6th for that event. So with their trade show, many speakers, and of course, their delegate sessions as well. Have yourself a great Monday. You're listening to the Red River Farm Network.